somebody recently used the term a yekka meter.
A yekka meter is the measurement of how much of a yekka are you. A yekka meter. That's, I love these things.
My wife's brother is still from West Hempstead.
Okay.
And he was in shul and he used to have a test them. 10-9
Right.
I was more happy to test them.
Wow, clock in his memory. They say that a stranger walked into a Yekesh shul in the afternoon and he says, are they davening mincha now? He says, no, not now, not now. Now!
That's why we went to weddings where we were watching the waiters put the tables together still, and there was no wedding yet.
Well, I have heard in this country, families, if the one side are Yekes and the other side are, let's say, North African persuasion, so there are two different sets of invitations that go out. To the Yekes, it says precisely what time the chuppah is going to be. Chuppah tiyeh b'shah sheva. To the other side, they write the chuppah is going to be at 5:30. And everybody's there. And everybody's there. No, by 7, everybody's there. That's the way to do it. You, that's right. Okay. Boker Tov. Today's shiur is sponsored by Sarah and Hanan Lehman in honor of their grandson, Eliyah ben Miriam Vigal Naveh, becoming bar mitzvah. Mazal Tov. Mazal Tov. Okay.
Mazal Tov,
yeah, but thank God. Mazal Tov to me too, right? Granddaughter. Granddaughter, yeah, yeah. My granddaughter in Florida is coming on Aliyah on July 4th. So we're going to get the whole Nefesh B'Nefesh out there with a whole parade just to welcome this 4-month-old baby. You know, of course, the parents are not coming on Aliyah. They're returning Israelis. But so her name is Arbel. What's Arbel? Arbel is a mountain. Arbel is the mountain near Tveria, in the north part of Tveria. And of course, my son is a... not only a pilot, but also a darshan. So he said, first of all, the baby was born in Chutz Laaretz, that there had to be some type of memory of Eretz Yisrael, geographic location. Okay, why Arbel? You know, I can think of maybe other things. So they said there was a story in the Gemara, it's in the Yerushalmi, in Mesech Brachot, of the two Tanaim who walked under Arbel at the end of the night, and they noticed how the night came to an end. And it came to an end in stages. The Ayelet HaShachar, Amud HaShachar, and Netzach HaMah. Three different stages of the break of dawn until sunrise. And one said to the other, Kach Tiyeh Gulat Am Yisrael. This is how the redemption will be. Kima, Kima, stage, stage, step, step. It's going to be a graduated process. And we're witnessing this in front of our eyes in the last 100 years. This Kima, Kima, stage, stage. All right, so what does that have to do with this baby? So baby was born on Tanit Esther. And the Medrash says that when Esther entered into the chambers of Achashverosh, so she said, Tilim Perakov Bet. Tilim Perakov Bet begins with Lamnatzeach Alayelot HaShachar, Keli Keli Lama Azavtani. So they wanted some type of a connection with Esther, with the Alayelot HaShachar, which connected to the Alayelot HaShachar of the story of the Tanaim on the Arbel. So it happened on the Arbel, so she's got that name now. She's Arbel. Okay. They said... so a drush, said a drusha. That's it. You know, our only problem is that it's one of those names that boys also get it. There are boys who carry it into, just like Noam. I know Noam boys. I know Noam girls. Yeah. So you're going to get you're going to get wedding invitations soon. That you know, Noam's marrying Noam, and you're not even sure if it's a boy or a girl. You know, on both ends. That's what's happening. You should know there's a tshuva from Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, that's all, the late Sephardi chief rabbi. He said not to give boys or girls names that are not exclusively or uniquely boys or girls names. He felt that there was something in the name, that to use a name that goes that you know go both directions. He thought there was something problematic with that. But all right, that was his opinion. I don't necessarily buy into that. Last week we dealt with this page on Mitzvah Tashbitu Be'erev Pesach, and just as a quick summation, we demonstrated that the Torah, we're in Parshat Shmot Yud Bet, which is we're going to read this coming Shabbat from after, the Parshat HaChodesh. And as I said, Parshat HaChodesh spends exactly one pasuk on the mitzvah of Rosh Chodesh, and then 18 psukim on Erev Pesach and Pesach. So with regard to Erev Pesach, it says, Ach, you see, source number one again, Ach, Bayom Rishon, Tashbitu, Seor, Mibatechem. But on the first day, you shall clean out your house from sourdough. But this is a reference to chametz. First day, the Gemara works very hard to convince us that Bayom Rishon doesn't mean the first day of Pesach. Nobody's going to wait till the first day of Pesach to start cleaning the house for Pesach. So it means the day before. The Yom Rishon here means Erev Pesach. That's what it halachically translated means. And the Gemara has a whole series of proofs on Dav Dalden and Dav Hei of Masechet Pesachim to show that this context, Bayom Rishon, means Erev Pesach. It's because the Rav asked a very simple question when we were studying Masechet Pesachim. So why did the Torah trip us up, you know, with this kind of language? And we have to wait for the Torah Shebaal Peh to come around and explain it. The phrase B'yom Arba'a Asar is known, the 14th of the month. We know that in the context of this parak. Why did it say Ach B'yom Arba'a Asar Tashbitu So'o Mibatechem? And then there would not have been an issue. So the Rav said a phenomenal understanding here of why B'yom Rishon is mentioned here. When does any new day start in the Jewish calendar? Sundown, right? Vayera Vayboka Yom Echad. For purposes of birthday, so that, you know, for bar mitzvah, bat mitzvah, for purposes of yahrzeit, the nighttime is the beginning of it. Even though a person may have passed away 3 in the afternoon, no consequence. You don't have yahrzeit at 3 in the afternoon. The yahrzeit begins the night before with sundown. Vayera Vayboka Yom Echad. Technically, Shabbat and Chag, anything in the calendar that's related is Erev ad Erev and so on. Vayera Vayboka Yom Echad. But there's an exception here. The Yom Rishon of Pesach doesn't really start with the night of the Seder. Well, really, it does. I mean, that's when we make Kiddush, and that's when we sit down, we don't marif. There's something about Yom Rishon of Pesach that begins 6 hours earlier. There's something about Yom Rishon of Pesach that begins with noontime of Erev Pesach. There's a Yom Rishon of the Chag quality already on the 14th. And this is how the Torah indicates it. The fact is, it's not the whole day of the 14th. The word Ach, the Chazal teach us, come to split. And if we have no other information how to split, then it's half to half and half. It's 50-50. So the daytime of Erev Pesach is split between the hours before Chatzot, before noon, and the hours after Chatzot. And after Chatzot is quasi-Yom Tov. It may be a little bit of a novelty to hear that those melachot that are forbidden on Chol HaMoed, and that's a story in itself, because somehow we've become a little bit lax with Chol HaMoed. We've made more Chol than Moed out of it, where maybe it should be more Moed than Chol. But there are things that we don't do on Chol HaMoed. So there are many poskim who say that from noontime on Erev Pesach until Yom Tov, it's like Chol HaMoed already. And that's why the people who will make sure they took a haircut or shave or cut their nails before Chatzot on Erev Pesach, because it's not like a Friday afternoon that you can still do what you want to do at 3, 4 in the afternoon. And this week, of course, it's going to be summertime. Don't forget to move your clock Thursday night, or else you're going to wake up an hour late Friday morning. But you get yourself an hour extra Friday at the end of the day. But Erev Pesach, there's something about the day of Yom Tov that begins. And I'll give you another interesting proof. Two proofs. One is halachic and one is minhag. We know that Shelo Nida Mitzarot, a person sits Shiva before a Yom Tov, so the Yom Tov breaks up the Shiva immediately. Just cancels, not breaks up, cancels the Shiva. It's not like Shabbat, where Shabbat counts to the Shiva, but you continue sitting Shiva after Shabbat. Yom Tov, there's no sitting Shiva after Shabbat, as long as at least a moment, the halacha uses the term Sha'a Achat, 1 hour, but it's not 60 minutes, even if it's 1 minute. Even if a momentary sitting of Shiva, which could be, and I've seen this with my own eyes, by the way, we had a cousin, an older cousin of mine, who passed away many, many years ago here in Shalim, and on Erev Pesach, and there was a Levaya in the afternoon. So the Avelim simply took off their shoes at the cemetery and sat down and accepted Tanchumim, and that was the end of Shiva. They didn't go home to a Shiva house. That was the end of Shiva. Literally a few minutes, and that was that. So we know that normally a Yom Tov, when this Shiva canceled, Vayera Vayvoke, at nighttime. That's what's canceled. Of course, the Rabbanim will tell the Avel, look, you need 2 hours to get ready for Yom Tov, so you can take those 2 hours, just like they'll tell every Avel on a Friday, you need 2 hours to get ready for Shabbat. But it doesn't mean the Avelus is over. All that means is a little bit of a heter, a permissibility to you know, do things to prepare for Yom Tov. But technically, the end of the Shiva is with the onset of Yom Tov at night. And the only difference is Erev Pesach. The Shiva ends with noontime on Erev Pesach. The person sits Shiva a day or two or three before Erev Pesach, or even Erev Pesach in the morning for that matter. So the minute the clock strikes 12, it doesn't literally mean our clock, but it means the Sha'od Zmaniyot, the relative hours. But right now, Chatzot today, as we talk, is 10 to 12. So the minute the clock strikes 10 to 12, it's Chatzot, the Shiva's over. The Shiva's over. It's not that they have the 6 hours till Yom Tov, it's like Friday afternoon that you can get up. No. The Shiva's over. Finished. That's it. That's a halachic proof that the Yom Tov factor begins with Chatzot on Erev Pesach. And now with regard to Minhag. So the Ashkenazi Minhag, the Sfarim don't have a little different Minhag, but the Ashkenazi Minhag on Motzei Shabbat is to say, V'inoam Hashem Elokeinu, and V'ata Kadosh Yishev Tilot Yisrael, before we say Aleinu L'Shabeach. The only time we skip it is if there's a Yom Tov in the middle of the week. So this year, Pesach comes out on a Tuesday, Monday night, Tuesday, so Motzei Shabbos of Shabbat HaGadol, we will dispense with saying V'inoam. That's, every Gabbai knows that, and if he doesn't know it, he'll know it the next time, because... they will decapitate him, you know. So people are very... right. Show a lot of mercy to the Gabbayim and Shul. So this is true. What happens when Pesach comes out on Shabbat, first day of Pesach Shabbat, which happens occasionally, so then the Motzei Shabbos before, you'd say, one second, Rosh Hashanah comes out on Shabbat, which happens, so the Motzei Shabbos before, we do say Vinayim, because there's a full 6 days before Shabbat. And that's when we say Vinayim. But if Pesach comes out on Shabbat, it's not a full 6 days. It's 5.5 days. Because Pesach starts on Friday from noontime. So the Motzei Shabbos before, they don't say Vinayim. So interesting. It is derived from the laws of Avelus. The fact that the Avelut ends, Shloshim ends, and Avelut ends with noontime is a halachic proof that the latter part of Erev Pesach is already an extension of Yom Rishon, which means normally Yom Rishon will kachtem lechem b'Yom Rishon shall take on the first day of Sukkot, the Arba Minim. So what's Yom Rishon? It's the 24 hours of the 15th of Tishrei. But what's Yom Rishon with regard to the 15th of Nisan? It's 30 hours. It's the 24 that we all know about, but add 6 at the beginning. It's from noontime, so it's a day of 30, it's a halachic day of 30 hours. In order, the way the Torah presents this is by nicknaming Erev Pesach with regard to the Biur Chametz factor, Yom Rishon. So why is, how do we know that it's noontime? Because it's a link to the bringing of the Korban Pesach. The Korban Pesach, in fact, was brought a little bit later than noon, but could have been brought at noon. Had the Korban Pesach been brought 5 minutes before noon, you have to bring another one. It's like bringing one today. It's like just putting up lamb chops there. But a minute after 12, you can already bring the Korban Pesach. So that shows that there's something about the spirit of Pesach already in the afternoon hours, from Chatzot, from noontime. And the Torah says, Lo tishchat al chametz dam zivchi. Chazal say, Lo tishchat al pesach v'adayin chametz kayam. Don't slaughter the Korban Pesach, and there's still chametz around. So Chazal understood that the Pasuk, Ach b'yom rishon tashbitu, doesn't mean you have 3 in the afternoon to get rid of the chametz too. You better get rid of it before Yom Rishon kicks in. And when does Yom Rishon kick in? Noontime. Noontime. This is a phenomenal understanding of the Rav. That's why he was the Rav, you know? He had these unbelievable ideas. Ach b'yom rishon tashbitu. So we saw that tashbitu in the Onkelos translates it to vatlun from the word beetle. And the word beetle, we try to explain what does it mean, annulment? Annulment of ownership. So we got into a whole discussion about two different ways how a person can disavow ownership. So one thing is called hefker. So hefker, okay, it doesn't belong to anybody. The question is, how can you making the chametz hefker, we learned last week, and we'll read it again in source number 10, where it said, Shivat yamim sa'or lo yimotzei bevatechem. Let's look at source number 10 again. Shivat yamim sa'or lo yimotzei bevatechem. You should not have sourdough chametz in your house for 7 days. Ma Talmud lomar, what has come to teach us? V'lo kfar ne'emar, it says, Lo yera'el licha sa'or b'chol gvulecha. And lo yera'el licha chametz b'chol gvulecha. V'fi she'ne'emar, lo yera'el licha sa'or, she'lecha iyata ro'eh. You're not allowed to see yours that belongs to you. אבל אתה רואה של אחרים ושל גבוה. But if it belongs to a goy, or if it belongs to Hegdesh, to Beit HaMikdash, it's not yours, which means it's not your ownership. It's, you're not violation of Bal Yira'e Bayimatzei, this double-edged Avera of having and seeing chametz being found in your house. Now, you're not allowed to eat chametz of a goy on Pesach. You're not allowed to eat chametz of Hefker on Pesach. That's for sure not. But the violation of not having in your possession chametz of Hefker or chametz of a goy, that's not there. The only violation is your chametz. And this is the loophole of selling chametz to a goy. Now, have you moved any of the chametz out of the house? No. But what we've done is, and I mentioned this last week already, the whole procedure that of how the chametz was originally sold. It was sold because there were people with tremendous stockpiles of whiskey, which was chametz, and there was no way in a million years they were going to burn it. So there had to be some type of halachic engineering going on. That's how it started. They sell it to a goy. But then it became more popular, and everybody wanted to sell their chametz to the goy. So at first they would... they would give your keys to the goy, but that, I told you last week, that wasn't such a great idea. And then they would give the keys to the rabbi, and that turned out to be not such a great idea either. So today we just give an address, and there were some rabbis for many years who would insist on defining in the apartment where exactly the chametz is. Here in Eretz Yisrael, you don't bother with that. You just give an address, and it's written in the document that we give to the goy, that he can come to your house at a reasonable hour. Like, he's not going to come 2 in the morning, but it comes in the 2 in the afternoon, knocks on the door. You have to let him in and show him his chametz. Fine, that's what we do today. But we're saying it's his chametz, and it's not your chametz.
The problem with that is that we don't know who the guy is. So that's any Arab could actually come and knock on your door and say...
Yeah, but he's going to have to provide the document. You would ask him to show the document. He gets a document. We sell it to the guy with all different types of kinyanim, just to be on the safe side, with a handshake, with money, with a document. Don't ask everything. I mean, that guy walks out a Talmud Chacham, that guy. Because at the end of the day, after Pesach, he walks out with a few good bottles, because they give him he knows he's doing a favor. Every guy who's doing this knows he's doing a favor. They play a game, yeah.
I asked you last week, I don't know if now's the right time. Yeah. What's the relationship between having both the Mechira and the Bitul?
Right, so basically we operate on Pesach with insurance policies. And you know, some people take out insurance policies for the double coverage. That's what it is. Let's assume the beetle, you know, you said the paragraph in the Haggadah or in the Siddur, but you didn't have a clue what you were saying, right? Now some people, that's why I tell people, don't read it in Aramaic, read it in English, read it in Hebrew, but know what you're saying. Kol chamira dechamia dika b'shuti dechazite lo chazite. People don't know what you're saying. So it says lehevi hefker ka'afra da'aretz. You become hefker like the ground, the dust of the ground. So I pointed out last week that in some Haggadahs it doesn't say the word hefker. Lehevi ka'afra da'aretz. So we pointed out that the Ramban had a problem with the word hefker. Why? Because he said that you can't just say it's hefker. You know, you have to declare hefker in front of three people. It's a procedure. If you want to renounce ownership over something, and being that we're not doing that kind of procedure of hefker when we do bitul chametz, so we're doing something else, which the Ramban called yeush. Yeush is a factor that we learn when we talk about lost items, lost articles, hashavat aveda, b'metzia per bet, and yeush means you lost something, but you didn't realize that you lost it until 3 hours down the road. But when you realize that you lost it, and you realize there's no way you're ever going to get this thing back, because there's an article that there's 10,000 of them all over the Yerushalayim on the street, so forget about it. The minute you say forget about it, that's called Yeyush. So you don't have to assemble three people and declare Hefker. Yeyush is a different mechanism of how you disavow ownership. The only question that the Gemara talks about, Mesav Bamatzia, is if in the interim, before you the owner, former owner, recognized or realized that you lost the item, somebody else picked it up already and acquired it, but the guy is going to be mityaesh. He's going to give up hope in an hour and a half, but he didn't do it yet. Is it already yours or not? That's a discussion between Abayin Rava, Yesh lo medat lo. I said, we talked about this last week. Fine. So the Ramban says it works with Yiyush, and the And most other Rishonim say it works with Hefker. This created the two expressions of the Koch Amira. Is it Lehevi Hefker Ka'afra Da'ara or Lehevi Ka'afra Da'ara? Is the word Hefker there or not? It's not a printing error. Or you didn't get cheated on the Haggadah that the word Hefker is missing. It means the author of the Haggadah knew the view of the Ramban and took it into consideration. Beseda, yeah.
What does Hefker mean?
Hefker means loss of, absence of ownership. Absence of ownership.
How does the person just explained, how does the person who found it know that
he doesn't know.
Was Yair?
He doesn't know. He doesn't know. He doesn't know. This is all theoretical. Obviously, the point is that obviously when Mr. Owner, first owner, will realize that he's going to be mityaesh, so then it becomes yours. It's going to happen, but it may not have happened this specific second. It may not have happened. And there could be a scenario where in the interim, maybe you bump it, the guy bumps into you, and the guy says, you know, I just lost a pen a half hour ago. And just stop the conversation. He says, oh, I found the pen a half hour ago. Yeah, that's mine. It's my pen. So do you say that it's your that it goes back to the original owner? Or had he not bumped into this guy, the amount of time would have passed already that he would have gone through the process of giving up hope of Yush. So on moment number one, it was already his. I mean, my wife says, this is what you guys do in the Bishmedrish all day?
But you know, there's a problem.
Right, forget it, no sin. I'm talking about there was no sin. A big pen, you know, like everybody.
The problem seems to me with this is if the person holds on to it long enough, they'll wait for the Yiyush.
Yeah, but you never know because you don't know who the fellow is, you don't know where he is. So these are all just theoretical concepts now. That's all. But anyway, with regard to what the Ramban says with Yiyush, with regard to just giving up hope, of having ownership is a factor in terms of the relationship that I have to an object. So I can relate to chametz with Yehush, and no, I'm no longer the owner. And I do not have to assemble three people and make a declaration of disavowing ownership and so on, which is really a more formal type of disavowing ownership, which is called hefker. All right, so that's what we saw last week. So now we're going to go back to source number three, as I say, for the reason that we assembled here today, Rambam Book of Mitzvot. Sefer Mitzvot. And the Rambam says in Mitzvah Kuf Nun Vav 156. Va Mitzvah Kuf Nun Vav in Mitzvah 156, Mitzvah Asay, the positive Mitzvah 156, he, Shetzivanu Leva'er Chametz Mi Batenu, to clean out our chametz from our homes. When? The Yom Arba'asar B'Nisan, on the 14th of Nisan. V'zu Mitzvah Tashbatat Se'or. This is the Mitzvah of Tashbitu. V'hu Amro Yidaleh, and this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Ach, ביום ראשון תשביתו סומי בתיכם. ויקראו חכמים גם כן מצוות ביעור. But the Torah uses the word תשביתו for the word Shabbat, cessation. What does Shabbat mean in the concepts of Yom HaShvi'i? It means cessation of work. וישבות ביום HaShvi'i. And he stopped working, so it's called Shabbat. So here, תשביתו, the root is Shabbat, but it's a cessation of your ownership to it. But here, the Rambam doesn't say cessation of ownership. He says it's bi'ur. And you know what bi'ur means?
Burning.
Destruction. Burning is a mode of destruction, right? Be'era with an iron does mean burning. Correct. Correct. It does mean burning. But in the context of dalacha, it means destruction. The truth is, this is machloket. Chachamim say you can fulfill bi'ur chametz by any old way. Any old way means you can throw it into the sea. You take chametz, you just throw it. Let's assume you're in a hotel for Yom Tov near the Dead Sea, and you're doing beer chametz on a Friday morning because you checked in a day or two early, and you have some chametz in the room, and you do b'dikas chametz the night before Erev Pesach in the morning, but you don't have a match, you don't want to burn it, you just go to the Yam HaMelech and you toss it into the Yam HaMelech. I don't think it's a good idea to do from an ecological point of view, but let's assume you did that. You are Yaitzah, you fulfilled the mitzvah of bi'ur chametz. You can do better. You can flush it down the toilet also, for that matter. And the reason I say this is because there's this whole issue of when Erev Pesach comes out on Shabbat, can you actually do bi'ur chametz on Shabbat? So if it's burning, then for sure you can't do burning on Shabbat. Whatever you're going to burn, you're going to burn the day before. The question is burning chametz on the 13th of Nisan a mitzvah? If I took chametz today, on the 24th of Shvat, of Adar, and I burnt it, I'm in violation of Baal Tashrit. What are you burning bread for? You're not allowed to do that. I can't have to burn bread. I'm not allowed to destroy bread. where any destruction is an Avera. So, but to burn bread? So here you're going to burn bread on the 13th, on a Friday, the 13th of Nisan. So there are Rishonim who say that there's a special dispensation that when Erev Pesach is in Shabbat, you burn the chametz on the 13th. That's all these halachot. What? Yeah. So you burn bread. So in other words, the mitzvah of Biur Chametz on the 14th suspends the Avera or overrides the Avera of Baal Tashrit. There was nobody's going to say, hey, why should I burn so much chametz as Baal Tashrit? Excuse me, Kadosh Baruch said burn it. Don't ask kashrus about Baal Tashrit. You're allowed to do it. It's a mitzvah to burn the chametz on Erev Pesach. So some Rishonim say that when Erev Pesach comes out on Shabbat, you can do it on Friday. You can do it on the 13th. And some say, what?
Motzei Shabbat.
That's a shir in itself. That's shir in itself. How to handle Erev Pesach Shabbat. So what I'm pointing out is that some people will keep, you know, small challahs like rolls for Melech Mishnah in the morning. What do you do with the extra, with the crumbs? What do you do with it? You can't burn it. Got to get rid of it. So the answer is you flush it down. And that's Biur Chametz. So there is Biur Chametz on Shabbat by other means. I mean, what the Mishnah says, throw it in the air. You know, you have a nice breeze, open the window, take those crumbs, achutza, that's Biur Chametz, going to the Mishnah. So there's a machloket, Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda. Chachamim say, b'chol davar, any mode of destruction. Rabbi Yehuda says, ain't Biur Chametz ela b'sreifa, it has to be burned. So the minhag is to burn Chametz, unless you don't have the possibility. Then you do it some other way. So here, the Rambam defines Hashbata as Biur Chametz. He does not define it as Bitul Chametz. See, Unkelus translated Tashbitu as Tivatlun. Now, Bitul Chametz means disavowing ownership. Disavowing ownership means you don't have to do anything to the Chametz. The Chametz, the crackers still sit right here. I just did nothing. I disassociated myself. So, of course, I'm not going to eat them. And maybe Chachamim said, all right, fine. So you took care of your Bal Yireh by Matzeh. But who knows? God forbid. Maybe somebody might stumble on it by accident and eat them. So midrabbanan, rabbinically, search your house for chametz, get it out of the house, destroy it. All this becomes rabbinic. But on the biblical level, you've done a job already by declaring non-ownership. That's one way to look at it. But the Rambam in the Sefer Mitzvot seems to indicate that the biblical way to do this is to destroy the chametz. And then the question is, why do we do Beetle? That's the insurance company policy afterwards. Maybe I didn't get all of it. Maybe I missed something. You don't want to miss something, and if it's still in your house, and it still belongs to you, you're in trouble. So you do Beetle Chametz to cover that which you may have overlooked. So that's what the Rambam seems to indicate, that the mitzvah is biur chametz, destroying chametz. And I'm reading further in source number 3. Ugemara Sanhedrin mitalmud de bnei Amarava. That means in the Gemara Sanhedrin of the Eretz Yisrael Gemara, we call Yerushalmi. And it's interesting, parenthetically, just make sure I get back to this line. Right, Rivka, just remember, I'm on this line now. Right, I'm just opening up another window now. That it was never really called, Rambam uses the word Yerushalmi, it was nicknamed Yerushalmi, but it was never written in Yerushalayim. When the Yerushalmi was compiled, Yerushalayim, I dare use the phrase, was Judenrein, was free of Jews. There was a Capitolonia, there was a Ilia Capitolonia, was built on the ashes of Yerushalayim by the Romans, and the Jews were not allowed to live here. The Torah in Eretz Israel was in the Galil, in three locations. On the coast, it was Caesarea. In the center, it was Tzipori. And the east, it was Tveria. And those three locations, Road 65, by the way, which cuts across from Hadera, over there, by that area, by Caesarea, Mamash, and it cuts all the way across the lower Galil to Tveria. That's where the Yerushalmi was composed. And it was called Yerushalmi in deference to Yerushalayim that was destroyed. So you should remember Yerushalayim. Yeah. But sometimes it was called the Talmudah de Bnei Ma'arava. What? Yerushalayim was destroyed in the time that Talmud Yerushalmi was put together. It was a few hundred years after the Churban. Bnei Ma'arava means the people of the West, because it depends where you're sitting. So if you're sitting in Babel, so the Westerners were not those in California. The Westerners were those in Eretz Yisrael. Bnei Ma'arava. There's also another. Just hit me now. There's another reason why they were called Bnei Ma'arava. not only because of the geographic location vis-a-vis Eretz Yisrael. What is behind the idea of the Chachmei Tzfat of the 16th century that the Mekubalim, the Kabbalists, would leave the shul and go out to the field and welcome in Shabbat? This is the Lecha Dodi. Lecha Dodi Likrat Kala. We're going out to meet the Kala, Pnei Shabbat Nikabla. It's based on a Gemara, by the way. They didn't make this up. Bo Netzei Likrat Shabbat Malkita. The Gemara says this. But the Chachmei Tzfat made it into a religion. They and this became our minhag when we say Lecha Dodi, that by Bo V'Shalom we turn around. So which way do we turn to? So some shuls, I love it, where half the people are this way and half the people are this way. I can't take it, you know, because everybody has to show that they're, you know, bigger tzaddik than the next. That the minhag was to turn to the, either to the door, because symbolically taking a step out of the door. So we don't do what the Chachmei Tzfat did, walk out to the field. But when you turn around, it's like it's your first step out of shul. So which direction would you go if you're going out of shul? Towards the door. So irrespective of what kivun, what direction the door is, that's where you'd walk. But in Europe, the shuls faced Mizrach. So the door was always the other end of the shul. So they were always looking at the door. But why were they looking at the door? Because the Chachmei Tzfat went west to receive the Shechina. Why? Because what creates Shabbat is the sundown. Where does the sun set? In the west. Where was Kodesh HaKodeshim in Beit HaMikdash? In the west. Why is the Kotel Maravi? Because it's the closed wall that's closest to the Kodesh HaKodeshim. It's not that wall survives. You know, and if it would have been the Kotel HaDromi, it would survive. It would have had a different status. The Kotel HaMaravi, it's not Beit HaMikdash, but it's a wall, it's an outer, you know, retaining wall of the Har HaBayit, but it's a close wall to where the Kodesh HaKodeshim was. And anybody that walks on Har HaBayit today, so if you just imagine this is Har HaBayit, and you're walking around, you get on Har HaBayit, and you're walking around this way, that's what you do, it takes about an hour and a half, and by the time you get off, that last part over here, which on this side is the Kotel, so here's the west side, and here's the east side, and below would be Har HaZeitim, Mount of Olives, right? So you're going up over here, you pass the Al-Aqsa Mosque on the right, and of course the Dome of the Rock is smack in the middle, and you're walking, and at the last part, you have to almost scratch yourself against the wall, because the border of where Kodesh Kodeshim was is so close, and you don't want to walk on the area of Migdash because you didn't do Paraduma. And this is one of the reasons that the Rabbanut, from day one after 67 war, has come out against visiting Har HaBayit, because you're bound to stumble. Of course, the response to that is, we can study and we can know. But I'm telling you, you have to really walk next to the wall, that last stretch to get out. It's the western stretch. Because you're standing meters away from where Kodesh Kodeshim was. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, all the other religions, they face east because they worship the sun. And worshiping the sun was sunrise, became the big, big spiritual activity. And Am Yisrael does the exact opposite. The exact opposite. We see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina in the sunset. And that's where Kedushat Zman, the sanctity of time, kicks in. So that's why the Kabbalists would walk in the western direction, lechadudi likrat kala pnei shabbat nekabla. That's why they would turn to the west in Europe with this minhag. But west also happened to have been the door, because the shuls faced Mizrach. Here in Eretz Yisrael, you daven not Mizrach, you daven towards Yerushalayim. So if you live in Gush Etzion, you happen to daven north. And if you live in Bet El, you daven south. And if you're in Maale Adumim, you daven west. And if you're in Tel Aviv, you daven east. So in these shuls, the door of the shul might not necessarily be west. So the question is, what do you turn around to when you daven? L'chadaydi, b'boi b'shalom. Do you turn to the door, or do you turn west? That, Baruch Hashem, creates friction in shul. And if we wouldn't have friction in shul, it wouldn't be defined as a shul. What's a shul without a... Shul without a machlokes is called a church. It's a... have to have a machloket. How can you have shul without a machloket? It doesn't work like that. All right. So, B'nai Ma'arava. See, Rivka, I got back to it by myself. I got back to it. But I'm sure you had the finger on the place. Am amru, chametz chayevim alav ase velo ta'aseh. Ase al biuro, tichtiv tishpitu sovi batechem, and lo ta'aseh, so'or lo yimatzeh bevatechem. Which means the Torah here slaps on a positive mitzvah and a negative mitzvah. So let's take a step back here. There are 613 mitzvot. It was the Abarbanel who took issue with the whole concept of ikarim, primary, principal mitzvahs. And because the minute you say principal mitzvah, ikar, like shlosha asar ikarim, 13 principles, then something's going to be tafel, secondary. So even the word tafel has a negative connotation, but it also means mishni. Mishni in modern Hebrew means secondary, from the word sheni. So there's principal, ikar, and there's mishni, secondary, or tafel, fine. Ikar and tafel we're familiar with in brachot. You have a sandwich, you have bread, you have cheese or tuna fish inside, you make the bracha Moshe Lech Manaretz, Mavarech al ikar u'poter et ha'tfilah. You don't have to make another shahakol on the cheese or the tuna fish, because that's a tafel, it's secondary to the bread. The bread's the ikar. So we understand, the word tafel simply means not the principle. So you have Sefer Ikarim of Rabbi Yosef Elbo. There's all different, the whole literature out there. We grew up on the Rambam's 13 principles, but there's a whole literature out there of differences of opinion. What are the Ikarim, the principles of the Rambam, of Yahadut, of Judaism? Our Rabbanu says, I know how many there are. There's 613. Every mitzvah is a principle. I mean, because he couldn't fathom the idea that if something is a principle, then something else is a tafel. What are you talking about? Mitzvah is a tafel. How can a mitzvah be a tafel? Having said that, putting that aside, and call it kavod to Abarbanel, nevertheless, we can structure the mitzvot into categories of a principal category of a mitzvah or an aveira, which carries with it all kinds of guarantors that the mitzvah is going to be observed. Now, we're familiar with the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot, asu siyag da Torah, put a fence around the Torah, which really is the rationale for all the rabbinic restrictions. Like you're not allowed to write on Shabbat. Okay, you're not to write on Shabbat. But it doesn't say in the Torah that I'm now to take the pen and walk around with my pen. The other thing is that if you don't move the pen on Shabbat, the odds are you're not going to be able to write unless you know how to levitate pens. So Chazal slapped on Muksa on the pen. So now you don't move the pen on Shabbat, and the guarantee is that you don't write on Shabbat. That's the rationale of a Isa de Rabbanan. So normally, we think Asus Yag Torah is rabbinic. But the Avot da Rabbi Natan, which is a type of Tosefta to Masechet Avot, Perkei Avot, it says Asus Siag la Torah, Asus Siag betorah. That in the Torah itself there are siagim, there are offenses. What does that mean? That there are some mitzvot, they're all doaita, they're all biblical, except that one is the principle and the other are revolving around them as gates. The Torah itself puts up gates. And one of the good examples is Chametz. The principle Avera on Pesach is not to eat a kezayit's worth of chametz on Pesach. On Pesach meaning 7 days, from the evening of the 15th until the end of the 21st of Nisan, those 7 day period, that's when it's asur midoraita to eat chametz. And if you eat chametz, a kezayit's worth of chametz, in that time framework, there's an onesh, a penalty of karet, which most Rishonim think is premature death before age 60. The Rambam says it means loss of Olam Haba, which is not pleasant either. So that's the Onesh Karet. Now the Torah comes and says, by the way, biblically, don't even eat less than a kezayit. Now if the Torah comes up and says another Aveira, don't even eat less than a kezayit, why did it have to give us the Aveira, don't eat a kezayit? The answer is, the onesh, the punishment. If you eat less than a kezayit's worth of chametz on Pesach, there's no karet. There's a suspension of the penalty, which means it's defined as a different aveira. It's counted, it looks different than everything. But it's still a biblical violation. Why does the Torah say don't eat a minuscule of chametz? A minuscule, what's called mashahu, a minuscule, not just 99% of a kezayit's worth, but even a minuscule. Because if you eat a minuscule, you might like the minuscule and take another minuscule, and it's going to add up. And eventually get to kezayit. So in order to guarantee that you don't eat a kezayit's worth of chametz on Pesach, don't even eat a minuscule. Now that rationale of the Torah is a viewpoint with regard to the other forbidden foods. But there is machloket already. For example,
you know, pork meat, the Besar Chazir. So everybody knows that only if you eat a kezayit worth of Besar Chazir is there an Avera with Malkot. But if you eat less than, it's called in the Halakha, it's called Chatzi Shi'ur. Chatzi Shi'ur doesn't mean 50%, it means anything less than the whole. Chatzi Shi'ur is anything from 1% to 99%. Chatzi Shi'ur. Just like we say Chatzi Kaddish and Chatzi Halil, so it doesn't mean half, it means less than the whole. So Chatzi Shi'ur of Besar Chazir, there is an opinion that says it's also forbidden biblically, except that there's no punishment in Beit Din on this. Another opinion says, no, it's not asur at all, from a biblical point of view, at all. But Chachamim said, don't eat a chatzi shir of Besar Chazir, because you might like it, and eat a little more, and a little more, and a little more. So what the Rabbanan did with Besar Chazir is exactly what the Torah does for everybody with regard to chametz. Okay, so we have now another biblical add-on. It's a biblical add-on. Then comes the Torah and says, and by the way, just to make sure you don't even eat a partial, a minuscule, get rid of it. Get rid of it before Pesach. And just to make sure that you get rid of it before Pesach, you're going to get an Avera if you didn't get rid of it. Not only you get one Avera, you get a bonus. You get two Averot, Bal Yer Matzei. This is all biblical. And not only that, but the Isur of eating chametz is now going to extend for another 6 hours. Because what I said before is that the biblical violation of eating chametz is from the onset of the Chag. And that's true with Karet. But now the Chachamim understood that there's another Isur, prohibition of eating chametz, on Erev Pesach in the afternoon hours. So there is it's not rabbinic. It's biblical. The Isur Torah of eating chametz in the afternoon hours of Erev Pesach. Now it doesn't carry with it Karet, for sure not. And whether it carries with it a malkot in Beit Din or not is a machloket of Tanaim, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. But everybody agrees that it's forbidden. Then and only then did the Rabbanan come into the picture and say, you know what? Just to make sure that you don't slip into over chatzot, let's move back the borders by another hour. So by 11 in the morning, don't eat chametz and don't have benefit for chametz anymore. Fine. Then Rabbi Yehuda says, what about a cloudy day? You know, not everybody walks around with all the sophisticated, you know, apps that will tell them exactly where he or she is and what time is the service man and everything. Cloudy day. They knew the time by looking at the sunshine. And maybe you might mess up by an hour. So Rabbi Yehuda moves back the prohibition of eating chametz on Erev Pesach by another hour. That's why the Sov Zman Achilat Chametz is 2 hours before noon, but the Sov Zman of burning chametz is only an hour before noon. So if I translate this into our clock, because I looked it up, 10:01, this is already summertime, on Erev Pesach, 10:01 is the last moment of eating chametz, and 11:21 is the last moment of burning chametz. Okay? That's how it pans out. So 10:01 is to finish eating chametz, and 11:21 you have to have the chametz burnt. So the 10:01 is the view that it's 2 hours before halachic chatzot, that just because it might be a cloudy day, you know, so we take an extra. This is all rabbinic, by the way. And then Chachamim said, just to make sure that you're really going to get rid of your chametz, so the night before, make a house search for the chametz. We call it bedikat chametz. And make sure your whole family's there. And make sure there's no shurim going on in shul. This is all halacha. No shurim going on in shul. There's no excuse rule here. And do it at night, because a candle light is going to be able to focus on every corner, because they didn't know from electricity and so on, and LED bulbs. But the candle would be able to, in a perfectly dark room, candlelight does a nice job. If you go slowly, you know, inch by inch, or meter by meter, that's how you do it. And do it deliberately and so on. And that's how Chazal built this whole thing of chametz. Of all these rabbinic add-ons, after the Torah has slapped on one add-on after the other. Insurance policies. And then comes the minag. After all these comes the minag and the chumras. The minag of kitniot. Not just chametz, but guess what? You know, or the bean products. Why? Well, there were two reasons. Kitniot, maybe they may have stored them in the same places with real grains and may have got mixed up. Or, you know, cornbread looks like real bread and so on. Whatever, the different reasons for kitniot. So some communities adopted it, some didn't adopt it. That's a parsha in itself, but it's a chumrah. And then came the Hasidim with the Shruya, what they call Gebrochs, that if the matzah was put into some aqueous solution, it could be chicken soup or whatever, you know, can't eat it. And of course, the Vilna Gaon went ballistic on this one, and he said it was a mitzvah to eat knedlach on Pesach, just to show the Hasidim were wrong. And normally, you know, you have a chumrah, fine, respect the chumrah. I mean, here the Vilna Gaon literally went ballistic, that he tried to undo this minhag and show that it was just so out of line. But again, if you have the minhag in the family, you know, I'm the last one to tell you not to do it. Just I feel sorry for you, because you have nothing to eat. But actually, people have what to eat if they don't eat kibros. Matzah, potatoes, and eggs. Right. And then, of course, comes the chumrah. You know, you can't eat tomatoes on Pesach, because the peels might be kidney. I mean, people have gone crazy. No, don't quote me on that. You know why people didn't eat tomatoes? Some people didn't guess, because they didn't grow tomatoes in Poland. That's why. They didn't know what tomatoes were. When I was in Beersheba, so they said from one Haredi Yishuv there, they said, can't eat watermelon because the pits have a chashash kidney. I mean, give me a break. Give me a break. And people have gone a little bit over the deep end on the kidney. And
what about the falsa fish?
What?
The falsa fish.
Falsa fish.
The falsa fish, where the Hasidim don't eat fish on Pesach because in Europe they fed kidneys to the fish, so they're worried the fish is. They fed chametz to the fish. They're worried that the fish are chametz stick. So they would ground chicken and make gefilte fish with.
Okay, so they call it false fish.
It was falsa fish.
Okay, I heard the name once. I didn't realize what it was. Okay, so now we're going to see something phenomenal in the Rambam. Take a look at source number 4. After having seen source number 3, where the Rambam defined the mitzvah of Tashbito as Bi'ur Chametz, so he says, mitzvah taseh, source number 4, this is already the Mishnah Torah, this is the Yad Chazakah, the Halachot, mitzvah taseh min haTorah lashbit chametz kodem zman isur achilato. You have to somehow, lashbit, he doesn't use the word leva'er, he's using the biblical phrase, lashbit chametz, before the time that it becomes forbidden to be eaten. As it says, here's a great opportunity just to tell you what these three words mean, because it's found throughout the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam. The Rambam categorizes different sections of the oral law, Torah Shebaal Peh. There is a section that there is a definitive tradition for Moshe Rabbeinu upon which there's no argument. It's not written anywhere, but it's oral tradition. Eventually, it was written in the Gemara, but it was handed down ish mipi ish and from generation to generation. And the Sanhedrin could not kick it around or debate it. They could not argue. There could be no machloket on a mipi hashmu'ah lamdu. This is something we have an unbroken tradition. She rishon zeh, the word rishon in this pasuk ach b'yom rishon hu yom arba asar. Upon this, there's no machloket. There's not one. You may try to argue out different ways of how to figure out the that it's chatzot, but the rishon in this context means the 14th. V'raya ledavar, and the proof is what it says in the Torah: Lo tishchat chametz dam zivchi. You're not allowed to slaughter korban Pesach, and the chametz is still around. Shneimar lo tishchat Pesach, v'dayin chametz kayam. Ushkitata Pesach and the story of Korban Pesach, who Yom HaBasar Achar Chatzot. As I already said, you can do this to Lev Chatzot. And then the Rambam asked the question, Umay Hashbata, tell me what is this Hashbata, Ha'amura Batorah, who she yevatel HaChametz Shelo. What is the Bitul? What is this? He's not saying destroy. He's saying yevatel. What is yevatel? He says, Yachshov Oto Kafar. You consider it to be dust of the ground. Yasim B'libo She'en B'shuto HaChametz Klal. You consider it that in your possession you have no chametz. You disowned it. You separated yourself from it. You disavowed ownership. I have no use for it. No need for it. What happened to the biur chametz? What happened to the burning of the chametz? In the Mishnah, in the Sefer Mitzvot, in source 3, Rambam defined the hashbata as biur chametz, and here he's defining it as bitul chametz. Almost like going back to the Unkelus, Tivatlun, Bitul Chametz. And this is rabbinically, Midevei Sofrim, L'chapeis Achar Chametz, V'lichtok, you know, fine. So rabbinically, this is what you have to do. You have to look for Chametz and check and so on. Fine, that's all Midrabanan. So So take a look at source number 5. Source number 5 is the Kesef Mishnah. Who is the Kesef Mishnah who writes on the Rambam? Kesef Mishnah is Rav Yosef Karo, the famous Rav Yosef Karo, the author of Shulchan Aruch, who writes a commentary on parts of the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam. He calls his book Kesef Mishnah in a very, very wise way. One is, where was the phrase Kesef Mishnah used in the Chumash? Yosef put double the money back in the sacks of the brothers. The Kesef Mishneh, he tells the servants to put double the money back in the thing. He is Yosef Karo. His name's Yosef. So he's got a reference to something that Yosef did. Plus, he's writing on the Mishnah Torah. But he's saying, I'm not the golden work. The golden work is the Rambam. I'm nothing but silver. I'm just the Kesef Mishnah. I think it's brilliant. The naming of the book. So what does he do here? He quotes from the Rambam, Umay Ashbata Zu Amura, Hu Shiyasir Hechametz Hayadua Lo Mirshuto, V'She'eino Yadua Yivatleo Bilibo V'yasimoto Ke'afar. Zu Nuscha Shebisvrei Rabbeinu Shebiyadeinu. The Rambam that I'm reading in a manuscript here in Svat in the 16th century does not read the way I read it on source number 4 in the middle paragraph al Achabet. In the middle paragraph, it just read, Maya Ashbata, what is called Ashbatat Chametz? It's Shivatel Chametz Bulibo. Here it says, I take all the Chametz that I know about it and get rid of it, I remove it from my possession, and the Chametz that I don't know about, obviously I can't remove it because I don't know where, I don't have a clue where it might be hiding in my house. So then the only thing that I can resort to is Bitul Chametz. Which means that there's a version in the Rambam that says that Biur Chametz is the mitzvah of Ashbatah. That's what you're supposed to do. And Bitul is the fallback in case you don't have an opportunity to perform Biur Chametz. Which means the version of the Rambam that the Kesef Mishnah is presenting here matches the Rambam's thinking in the Sefer Mitzvot. That the definition of Ashbatah is Biur Chametz. And Bitul is only a fallback. Whereas in the printed that we have today, in source number 4, there's no mentioning here of the biblical definition of Biur Chametz, but everything is Bitul Chametz. Everything. Biur Chametz is rabbinic. It's just rabbinic add-on, just to play it safe. So what happened here? The Rambam changed his mind. The Rambam changed his mind, and the Rambam's early version of the Mishnah Torah is exactly what Rabbi Yosef Karo has. And the Rambam never, Rabbi Yosef Karo never got a hand on the Rambam's updated version. Why not? It's 400 years later. Because they didn't have WhatsApp. They didn't have communication. When the Rambam made a change, so he makes it in his manuscripts and tells people in Cairo, you know, correct, correct. So word gets out. But it doesn't get out all over the world. So there are manuscripts, before the print was invented, there are manuscripts that have the early version, there are manuscripts that have the later version. And it's hit and miss where somebody in the 16th century gets a manuscript of the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam. Does he have a manuscript that reflects the early version, or was already corrected? And here you have a classic case where Yosef Karo is not informed that the Rambam made a change. And he's looking at the Rambam that we have, he knows about it, but he's saying, no, that's not right. I have the real Rambam here. And what Rabbi Yosef Karo is saying is that this is the version. Rambam means that Hashbatah is Biur Chametz, fundamentally, and Bitul Chametz is the fallback. If you're Chametz She'eino Yadua. Now, do you remember in the Nusach of the Kol Chamira that we say, the Chazite, the Lo Chazite, the Chametz that I saw, the Chametz that I didn't see, and there's a different version in the morning. In other words, in the nighttime, we say Bitul Chametz only on the Chametz that I found. You know why? Because you left over some bread for breakfast the next morning. You're not making Bitul Chametz on that. But in the morning, after you finished eating breakfast, and now you really have to deal with Chametz at a death blow, So you say that the bitul chametz is not only on what I found, but on what I didn't found. Everything. So we have here an interesting case where Rabbi Yosef Karo actually has the Rambam's version that reflects the early version. Sefer Mitzvot is an early version. And Rav Kapach, in his footnoting on the Sefer Mitzvot, he said it so well. It says, Kan sover Rabbeinu in the Sefer Mitzvot of source 3, Ki hashpata amura b'torah, hi abi'ur, v'chein hu, b'chot chametz matzah, perek bet al achabet, b'mahadura kama. What does that mean? First edition. Ma yashbata amura b'torah, hi shiasira chametz yadua lo mishuto, v'she'eno yadua yivatlo b'libo, v'kach haya nusach lefnei harav kesef mishnah. And that's the way it's in a print in Rome. That's the way it's in Yemenite manuscripts. Which means the Yemenite manuscripts, says Rav Kapach, were not updated. Which means it's a late change in the Rambam's lifetime. That's what it means. Because if the Yemenites didn't have it yet, what?
Did the Rambam date the manuscripts?
No. Sometimes there are internal signs where you might get a clue. What about it? But usually there are different ways. First of all, this handwriting. We know the Rambam's handwriting changed as he gets older. So that also, the Gafalog, can be used to date. So there are different ways. But here it's clear, Rav Kapach saying, he comes from Yemen, says, we didn't have this. But he's aware of the fact that it must be the latest view, reflecting the Rambam's latest view. And just for a closer, turn to the second side, please. The last thing in the world, this is sources 16 and 17. The last thing in the world, 15, 16, and 17, is to think, 15, 16, and 17. The last thing in the world is to suspect that the Rambam had a Hasidic idea embedded in the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam. I heard once from our great Rebbe Ravan Lichtenstein Zatzal said there's no ounce of Kabbalistic thinking in the Mishnah Torah of the Rambam. It's 100% halacha. It's Lithuanian. It's not Kabbalistic at all. So to suspect that the Rambam has some Hasidic idea. So in source number 5, you have a very interesting medrash on Ushmartem et haMatzot. You should guard the Matzot. And there's a play on the word Matzot, which also spells out the word Mitzvot, commandments. So it says, Rabbi Yoshia Omer, Al tikra kein ela Ushmartem et haMitzvot. Guard the commandments. Kadero she'ein machmitzin et haMatzah. The way you don't let the Matzah become Chametz. Kach lo yachmitzu et haMitzvot. Don't let a mitzvah opportunity sour. Ela im ba mitzvah liyadcha, aseh otcha ota meyad. A mitzvah opportunity presents itself, do it now, or in the popular way, mitzvah haba liyadcha al tachamitzena. Do not let it become sour. Don't miss the opportunity. The Rav made a big deal about this in his famous speech on Yom Tzvot 1956, Kol Dodi Dofek, 8 years after the state was established, pleading with American Jewry not to miss the opportunity of Aliyah, 1956. Don't get me started on this. What happened to everybody who listened to the cheer and the Rav? But that was the case. He made a very, very convincing case. All right. So you see there's a connection between Chometz and Mitzvot. In Hasidut Chabad, it's a known idea that Bidikat Chametz is not only the search for the bread, but it's a search for all missed opportunities. All missed mitzvah opportunities. And I was taking this medrash in source 15 to a logical conclusion. So if you're searching for Chametz, you're also searching your heart for those opportunities to do a mitzvah that you blew, that you missed the opportunity. Okay, that's a nice Hasidic idea. Now take a look at something startling. The source 16 and 17. Look at the address of source 16. Rambam Ulchot Chametz Matzah Perek Bet Halacha Bet. Chapter 2, Halacha 2. Look at source 17. Rambam Ulchot Tshuva Perek Bet Halacha Bet. Same address. In Ulchot Chametz Matzah and Ulchot Tshuva. Now listen to the phrases and tell me if they don't sound almost identical. Mai hashbata, I'm reading 16. What is hashbata? Zu amara b'Torah, sheyevatel chametz b'libo, yachshov oto ke'afar, v'yasim b'libo she'ein b'rishuto chametz klal. You get it out of your mind. You correct your thinking on this. Read 17. Mai hatshuva, what is tshuva? Sheyazov achotei cheto, you leave the sin, yasiru mimachshavto, v'yigmor b'libo, shelo yaseo od. you have an intellectual decision in your mind, you're not going to return to this. The phraseology of these two halachot are very, very similar. Very similar. And they both are perek bet, halacha bet. It's too... It's much too coincidental that the Rambam didn't have some subliminal idea here when he wrote either Hilchot Tshuva or Hilchot Chametz HaMatzah, that there is a connection between Tshuva and Biur Chametz, that there's something here. Now, of course, I told this over to a Chabadnik, and he says, Betach! You know, I mean, the Rambam was a closet Chabadnik, you know. As he told me, that the world, Jewish world, is divided into two. Those who are Chabadnikim, those who are not yet Chabadnikim. Because they're very optimistic. But I think this is a startling observation of a phraseology in the Rambam from sources 16 and 17 that looks so familiar. And they're both the same address in the respective halachot of the Chot Hametz HaMatzah and the Chot Tshuva, and the same question, Maya Ashbata, Maya Tshuva, and the Yasiru Machshavto, Yivatel HaChametz B'libo, Yachshov Oto Ke'afar, Shelo Yaseu. It's just too close. It's too close to think that this is stam. It can't be just stam. All right, the Rambam's not here to ask him, and Zell. Okay, I say the Mitzvah Shem next week, we will deal with another chapter, which will be Pesach related as well.